You're listening to UnConcast on the Georgia Podcast Network, featuring unconference sessions and other related discussions from around the Southeast.
Hi, thank you for coming. My name is Tessa Worlett, and I wear a lot of hats. Most recently, why they asked me to sort of lead the discussion today. I have been most recently working with an organization that I started with two friends of mine called Atlantans Together Against Crime, where I've basically been using a lot of information that's already available through the city, through organizations in town, through a lot of different sources, and sort of consolidating it into a more easily manageable format, either through, I'm interested in crime stats in my neighborhood, I'm interested in rape crisis centers, I'm interested in park conservation societies, anything that could be long tail associated to crime in Atlanta. We've been getting tons of national and international coverage of it, which has been incredible based off of the fact that we launched a Facebook group behind the organization the day it started, and in a matter of days we had thousands of members of it, and on our Twitter account and on our Facebook and on our actual website as well. Our community came together from a lot of crime that's been happening in Atlanta lately pretty easily, and very much interested in how they could be involved. And I felt that the city was offering a lot of this stuff and other organizations in Atlanta, everything from church groups to nonprofits, other nonprofits, and a lot of it just didn't have a voice loud enough to where people were available of what's going on. So I've been leveraging a lot of social media in order to consolidate and really get the communication out there in an easier way where people can find what they're looking for. Another thing you might have known that's social change related, socially related, was I did the ATL gas hashtag on Twitter a few months ago during the Atlanta gas crisis. What I do for a living is I consult companies on how to integrate social media and new technologies into their existing marketing plans. Or if they're already engaging in those type of services, I teach them how to optimize what they're doing, make better use of it, really be able to measure and determine whether they are doing an effective job, what exactly they're getting from it, whether they're reaching the target demographic they're looking for, so forth, whatever, based around the goals that they're looking to achieve. I guess I'm kind of curious, because you guys all come from different sides. Some of you work for nonprofits, some of you don't at all. Do any of you currently use any type of social media towards more of a social change type of target? What kind of stuff do you do with it? I mean, what are you playing with?
I'm Sean, I have a company called Free Roll Media. We do a lot of corporate social responsibility type projects, and we have a project we picked up for our own company called the Hippo Roller in South Africa. It's a water transportation device. And so I said, well, if we're going to do it, let's do it big. And so we picked up a lot of social media. We've got a lot of attention from it. We have a Twitter account, which it's kind of hard to talk about water every day, but there's a lot of stuff going on, especially down there, cholera epidemic, yeah. And stuff like that. But yeah, we got a Facebook page and we got a website. The best thing is just the press you get because of all the cross-promotion stuff.
Is that just because you have the information in more places, or because you're targeting people who have louder voices?
It's a little bit of both. We're seeing a lot of attention out of, like, Australia and across the world. So it's not just U.S.-centric, and that's where it's cool to work on a global cause, because you can really look beyond your backyard, you know.
Absolutely.
There's a lot of cool channels out there.
What's the Twitter username?
Hippo Roller.
What countries do you work in? What countries? Just all over?
I'm here. And these guys are in South Africa.
South Africa.
And then there's interest across Europe and Asia.
And it works. I wouldn't probably know about that, but I do.
Yes.
Your outreach.
Ta-da!
And it's
nice.
It's like a barrel with a handle.
Yeah.
And you move water with it.
It's awesome. It's a simple idea.
Simple.
And it's helping out a lot of people, because the women don't have to put buckets on their heads and get neck problems, back problems, and the kids can go to school. They don't have to carry water all day.
Mm-hmm.
And it's it's pretty awesome. We got contacted by 60 Minutes this week. They want to get involved, and Newsweek wants to run a story, and it's pretty cool.
Awesome. Have you asked them how they've heard about what you're doing? Is it just through other coverage that you've been getting of it?
It just all snowballs. And then we got contacted, which is pretty awesome, by some of the guys that had just gotten off of the Obama campaign. And we're like, okay, so you guys did the email marketing. And they would get a directive from Obama, like, okay, we got to raise $25 million this week.
Yeah.
By email.
No pressure.
So that was pretty cool, because then they were coming off the campaign and they didn't want to work for a company. Like, I do a lot of corporate work, and you can't get the same kind of talent as you can with people that really are passionate about a cause or something. So that's where you get like the real drive and people that are really motivated. And it was cool because they brought in a lot that taught me how to work with nonprofits and raising funds, that, you know, the language to use, you know, just keep a simple message, keep a simple profile, tell a story about a single person, you know, all that.
Mm-hmm.
It's
absolutely
cool.
Yeah, that's something that with my work with ATAC, I've definitely been getting a lot of lessons in online moderation while still maintaining an open forum. A lot of more targeting, especially on such a sensitive topic for a lot of people as crime is, especially violent crime. Being able to, our most recent thing that we did is we hosted a dine out at about 90 different Atlanta restaurants, and because of that, they were able to raise a ton of money, which went towards Crime Stoppers Reward, which is operated by the Atlanta Police Foundation. And basically, it's an organization that was created by the Atlanta Police Department, separate from them. But basically, you can make contributions towards it, whatever.
Explain Crime Stoppers. And I actually work for the Atlanta Police Foundation.
Okay.
I'm very familiar
with awesome.
Your group, because, you know, from that case, from everything that happened, you know, we launched a Facebook page, and so we're linked into you now. And so, and that's actually one of the things I came was how to kind of host, you know, something that's very open but moderated, you know, because of the topic with crime. And so the dine out went to Crime Stoppers Atlanta, which is an anonymous tip line where people can call in about a crime that they see and give information to the police. And because it's a privately funded program, there's no open records requests or anything like that. And so their identity will remain anonymous. And it's been one of our best programs, one of the programs that we can really use to speak to people about our mission. And so, and with the John Henderson case, that one just, it made so many people passionate that it was an opportunity for us to kind of get our name out there and really, you know, share our mission with people. And, you know, that's all we have on Facebook page. So.
Absolutely. I've talked to your COO,
Allison.
Allison on Facebook.
Yeah.
Because part of with ATAC, what we're doing is we totally support the Atlanta Police Foundation and what they're doing.
Atlanta Police Foundation?
Yeah. The Atlanta Police Foundation. And we've done little things.
Do you have a
website
or something?
Yeah. It's AtlantaPoliceFoundation.org.
Yeah, we've done like PDFs where people can print them at home and get information out to sort of. It's been around for a while, but a lot of people don't know about it unless they see a billboard or something like that. So we've been, again, using our platform and our audience that we've created that's come from a response of an action that had happened, which in this case was a murder. And due to that sort of call to action, we've been able to collect this group of people who are very interested in doing something about the crime in their city, whether it's in their backyard in 15 minutes or if they want to volunteer or show up at a rally. And we've been able to use that to help promote, for example, this Crime Stoppers Reward. And by doing so, we've helped them basically hit the highest Crime Stoppers Reward they've ever had. It's up to $45,000 now. Previously, it was only $27,000, I think, was the next highest. And I believe it started at $5,000?
Yeah. Well, initially, it was $2,000.
We
bumped it up to $5,000, and then we had several within 2 days, about $15,000 more come in, and then we added the dine out to that.
Yeah.
So how do you go out preventing a crime, typically?
What is the Crime Stoppers Reward, actually?
The idea is somebody can call in and say, I have information about this crime.
Yeah, it goes for information leading to the arrest.
And it goes to a police officer. There's someone who answers, you know, they answer the phone, and now we're moving to trying to do it via text. Trying to move it to campuses, and so there's a lot of things that we're trying to do there now, but it's basically cash for telling on somebody.
People know,
down the street. It might be your boyfriend, it might be your friend, it might be some, and so it's just cash for giving somebody.
No, actually, what I was pointing out is that the real prevention could only happen if you start with the cause, and what I am totally disillusioned by my having experienced through there, is a lot of times they actually arrested me for something totally false, and I have a felony charge against me right now. But it's basically, when something like that happens to a particular individual, and this person is a totally injustice or whatever, you know, maybe in their family, maybe while growing up, whatever, sometime in their life, and then they are incarcerated, and when they come out, there's no second chance. There's no second chance, and there's nothing. I want the police to work as a knowledge work of philosophy, in which you basically find out the, not a reactive approach, but a proactive approach in how we can prevent, how can the community get involved, and find out what happens to this person. Why is being so angry? This person usually is a very docile or very silent person. Why is so angry today?
A lot of what we're doing with ATAC is really taking a more positive, proactive approach. We're not saying this is why crime is happening. We're saying, like, we should encourage more outreach in schools. We should support these nonprofits that are already doing great stuff, who just need more support or manpower, or for their voice to be a little louder to certain communities where they might be able to tap into resources.
You know, I have...
Sorry, Rusty?
Yeah, I was just going to say that, like, police work almost by nature is kind of a reactive force. It's not really designed as a proactive force. I mean, I would think there's, like, other sectors of society that need to take the more proactive...
No, actually, in New York, when Mayor Rudy Giuliani read in a case study, he actually had an experiment with the idea of police, a certain force of the police force actually acts as a, not only their power, they work as a moral authority in the community. And they work with other community members in trying to work with the community, what is happening in the community. Why, you know, they can, that's why actually it can change or bring us to the...
Unfortunately, you can't really change how the police system in Atlanta works. Using social media, you can influence
you
that.
You can just have a
that's definitely part of what we're trying to do, is bring attention to, like, for example, crime in Atlanta has been a problem for a really long time. This
sure.
is nothing
no,
new.
No, I think we should focus on, the reason I came here was, yes, I know we have so many causes which I'm passionate about, but what actually I'm struggling with is how to connect with other people having the same passion that I do about some cause. That's what actually I'm here for. So if
Absolutely.
You can focus
that's what I'm trying to do on a local level, is be able to help these people find each other, whether it's through their neighborhood, through a specific cause, however they're looking to connect with people to work towards a particular cause. And by leveraging a lot of the social media that we are doing already with ATAC and that we're getting ready to do, we've been able to help facilitate a lot of these relationships and serve as more of a connector, as well as even information. So if you're interested in doing something, you are more empowered to do so because you have the resources there.
So
and
what
the great thing, do what?
What are we doing with?
It's called Atlantans Together Against Crime. It's just atlantanstogether.org. But the great thing about social media, especially for nonprofits, is that it's free. And it is really just an issue of, you need to learn how to communicate over it, what you're trying to do with it, really define what your goals are, who your audience is,
so
how you want to reach
what's
them.
What's the solution?
Social media?
Oh, yeah.
Yep. And really, in order to even be able to figure out what type of tools might be valuable for you, you need to figure out what type of end result you're looking for. Who are you trying to reach? What type of action are you trying to make them have, or what type of information are you trying to get across, whether it's somebody attending an event, whether it's fundraising, whether it is just information distribution. Once you can identify who your audience is and what type of action you're trying to draw out of them, you can look online and then say, for example, if I'm looking to hit college females about personal safety or something like that, or self-defense, and I can look based off of online communities, you can find this information pretty easily online and figure out where those type of audiences are. For example, I might target specific Facebook organizations or something like that, or create a Facebook fan page and then help drive through advertising or through a Twitter account or whatever, wherever you can figure out where that audience lies to begin with.
Do you ever have any fears about, like, so, and I'll kind of put it in the context of the Twestable, I think, that just took place, where that, it might have been a little going, what's that, or it's coming up, right?
Wait, when's the 12th?
It's called Twestable.
Is it a Twitter thing?
It's a Twitter thing. It's basically a national, international sort of event that everybody is doing on February 12th to raise money and awareness for water.
Cherry water.
Yeah.
So, but I guess the question is, I mean, as I understood, that was kind of a rogue, you know what I mean? It wasn't necessarily Charity Water. The organization said, you know, here's our name, go do this.
Yeah.
And I guess in kind of what y'all are doing with Atlanta Crime Stoppers, do you see that maybe from that social media organization you're creating or the people that participate, there could be a rogue group that comes out and says, you know, vigilantes against crooks, and they all guarantee, you know, they're gun carrying.
Funny you mention that, because I've got plenty of, that's what I kind of was alluding to at the online moderation recently.
Okay.
One of our biggest problems that we've had in particular is that, to be completely blunt about it, we got 3 white people running an anti-crime organization in Atlanta, which is a city that stereotypically has had lots of issues among many different groups, whether it's race or sex or anything like that. It's still a very much a hot topic in Atlanta. And we've definitely gotten accusations based off of comments on our Facebook page, on our discussion board, on our blog, accusing us of basically being like white vigilante lock 'em up types. And then we have to sit here and be like, well, number one, I'm a woman. That should count for something. Kyle is flaming gay. You know, I mean, we do have some diversity here.
Right.
But even just at even a lot of our messaging, we've had to start integrating in a lot more disclaimers, you know. This is an open community, and we're only going to censor it as we see fit, which literally we, anytime somebody alludes to, like, go buy a gun and, or advocating any type of serious violence or making any type of serious race comment, we take off. But we really try to make sure it stays as open as possible so that we're not pushing our personal beliefs on how, because there are a lot of different answers and there are a ton of different research out there. We're not trying to tell people how to feel comfortable, how to deal with stuff. We're just telling them what the options are. And it's been definitely a test in moderation. And there have been groups who have been, and there have been people walking around. Somebody walked up to Mayor Franklin and presented themselves as a member of our organization because they've been active in our Facebook group.
Mm-hmm.
And she was under the impression that they were coming from our perspective. And we've had to basically, through discussions, say, actually, it's just the 3 of us, and this is what we believe, and this is what we're trying to do, and this is how we want to work with you. And it's definitely been interesting in order to figure out the type of hierarchy, especially with such a young organization. We don't have nonprofit status yet. We've done very little PR ourselves. A lot of it has all been reactionary stuff in the press who have seen what we've been doing and responding to it. And it's even at this point, I mean, we had Science Christian Monitor write us up, ABC News, NBC Nightly News. We've been getting tons of press, but haven't necessarily been able to build the infrastructure behind it, which is a lot of the reason that that stuff has been capable. I mean, we're getting a lot of that, and then we sit down and have a meeting, and we're like, this is my title, this is your title. And once you have this sort of stuff and we have it up on the website, people can look and see this is who's in charge to really be able to help control the messaging more between our Facebook, our mailing list, our everything else, and people know that we are the information, the resources. We are the sources of authority as far as any type of messaging that's going out there. But with any type of organization, especially something as controversial as crime, you're going to have people who give it a bad name, always, for one reason or another. And a lot of it is just being able to, through your different resources, really commit to saying, like, this is who is in charge of all of our official messaging or whatever, and keeping that consistent across many different platforms, even though you will have to adjust it. I mean, the stuff that we put on Twitter is not the same stuff we put on Facebook, and it's not the same stuff we blog about.
Can you tell us from the beginning, of course, we're trying to understand the social media, how to use it, of course, not a particular non-profit, and I appreciate what you're doing, but how you went ahead and started, and or the, how the business started, how you had initial believers or the stakeholders or the closed unit, 3 or 4 or 10 people that you got, you know, how, if you can start with that, that would be really helpful.
How it started,
how you initiated the marketing to other people.
How you started using Facebook initially, and how you started using
Twitter. How I started using the tools initially? Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
And maybe what do you recommend out of that selection?
Experience.
Mm-hmm.
I have done nothing except for community management my entire career. It started out in the music industry, running street teams for bands, and as sites like MySpace came around, a lot of it started moving more and more online, and now I'm primarily completely online. I have worked in the past a lot with a wide variety of businesses, working with more of a viral online marketing campaigns, which often include social networks, and through that have just am a member of a few hundred, maybe thousands, which are sad, but even just through my experience, I register for sites, I get to know them, I look to see what type of communication is available, what benefits they have, the downsides of them, what they can offer a particular person, who they best target, all that sort of stuff. I mean, basically, it's the same thing you do when you walk into a room at a party, you size up the room.
So let me ask you a question. I think I've been asking a lot of general questions. Actually, I'm trying to create something. It's called Low Vision. It stands for Take My Vision of Live, Laugh, and Love. And O stands for Opportunity, Optimism, and Openness. And what this law is actually a religion of love. There's a lot of personal story behind it of an interracial marriage or the first marriage. But what actually this does is, I'm thinking about music, movies, and online education. And that's actually the primary medium of propagating the message of love, hope, and peace all across the world. If a thing like this, you know, and then we have a health and healing section, all that stuff. But I'm trying to create this, but I'm actually have a full-time job, not job, but I have a business, which is, again, have its own challenges. So how you think, you know, in this situation, or what I, again, is, and a lot of solutions I have for this country and the world, which are pretty interesting, but I never know how to market it. And I spend, the reason my business is struggling is how to market to the administration, how to market to somebody who can have the authority to take some steps, because I don't have the authority a lot of times.
Mm-hmm.
So in social media, the big thing is listening to your audience. You don't want to talk the whole time, you want to listen to what people are saying.
Sure.
So really just paying attention to the communities that you want to participate in. You know, so you don't try to lead the conversation, you just listen and see where the
on a follow-up question on that. So if somebody, I'm here, right? I spoke now, and I should listen now, okay? Now, so how do I know here in this or in a social media site that who are the people who would be a target audience for my kind of a mission or a vision?
Well, one thing we suggest, what I've given corporate talks about Twitter, is that you want to step in and kind of size up the room, like Tessa was saying, you know, kind of see what's going on, you know, so you're appropriate, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And so then kind of pay attention to the environment or the community that you're going to join, and then you can participate. And so that way that you're getting in the right context and using the right language, you can be understood the best.
So you follow for a while and listen to what other people are doing. And
that's what I would suggest, yeah, absolutely.
So you basically find out the similar community and then try to be listening to what they're saying and then try to connect with people.
Mm-hmm.
Using their language and trying to tailor your message to issues that are important to the community.
Not necessarily using their language, because you don't want to, like, for example, if I chose to go to, like, a gay bar or something like that, I wouldn't necessarily dress up in sequins or something like that in order to do that. You know, I would go in as myself.
Yeah.
And in any type of online environment, you have to have that transparency. You have to be completely honest. And otherwise, people will see through it. People are very smart, especially people who are very active online. And if you don't have full honesty and trust in those people, then it will discredit your brand.
Or when you got started, you mentioned one of the cases that made people passionate. So is that, so you have to start with something, and then that's what you start to build around. There's a kernel in the center. So you can just kind of slip into the stream, figure out what's going from there.
I mean, it totally varies. I mean, I also helped start a few years back a local bicycle co-op called SoPo. And we literally just started by people fixing bikes in a house, like, in a random neighborhood in Atlanta, and more people heard about it and would come. And we would tell people about it on MySpace bulletins and stuff like that. And eventually it grew when we started developing the online presence more.
How did you communicate that having bikes was important? That's the first step, right?
No, not necessarily. What we did first is we found the existing community that was already there. Okay. No matter what you're doing, somebody's done it before.
Mm-hmm.
Just get over that now. You know, I mean, they might not have done it well. They might not have done it in your area, but it's been done before. And whenever that's a great place when you're especially entering a new type of social media site, is looking for people who are already talking about the stuff that you're looking for, you know? I mean, you've seen tons of different, depending completely on the medium, Twitter has search options so you can find people talking about specific topics in certain areas. Facebook has a lot of the same sort of stuff built into it. Find the people who are already talking about it, because they're going to be more interested. If you're trying to sell cars and somebody's car shopping, they're going to be a lot more interested in what you're trying to sell.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's easy work you can do for yourself, and once you do that, you have a base in which you can build off of as well.
Thank you.
Oh, I had a question, because you mentioned that, like, for ATAC or even for other, for some of your clients or for ATAC, that the stuff you put on Twitter is kind of different than the stuff you put on Facebook. So I was wondering if you could talk a little bit about that and how your messaging is different, maybe about the same thing, but just about how you do it differently.
Basically, I mean, even just the way that we determine the sort of stuff that we put out there, I mean, in format alone, Twitter, much shorter. Facebook, you have a lot more space. You have an option to message people directly on Facebook that we don't have on Twitter, but we still want to encourage the conversation on Twitter as well. So for example, on Facebook, we put tons of information about our rallies on there. We allow people to have a pretty open format as far as conversation goes on there. And we definitely push a lot more information out on there. Mm-hmm. Well, for example, on Twitter, we will link to our blog posts that we put on there. We will find people who are already talking about ATAC, encourage them to come out to our rallies, let them know about stuff that's going on. If somebody, for example, mentions John Henderson, we bring attention to the Crime Stoppers Award. We're really just trying to answer questions and more provide information that people are already looking for. Then, on our blog, we talk about tons of stuff that isn't necessarily related to anything we're doing. Like, I've been blogging recently about the Georgia Department of Corrections and programs that they have going on, which are completely relevant towards crime in Atlanta.
Can you tell me the site for your blog?
It's atlantanstogether.org.
No, your blog address.
That's the blog. Okay. Atlantanstogether.org. We do tons of just information that's out there. It's on their website. But how many people seriously go and look at the website of the Georgia Department of Corrections, you know? I mean, and a lot of times people, especially on more socially pertinent topics, they'll bitch about it all day long, but they might not necessarily be informed about it, which is why we're trying to bring that information over. But, for example, telling people about all that sort of stuff on our Twitter would not be necessarily as relevant. While in something like a blog format, you have more time to be able to sit there and discuss stuff. We can repost letters from commissioners on there that don't fit 140 characters.
Yeah.
You know, we can link to it all day long. But, for example, I use analytics tools so I can see what people click on with our Twitter. I can see what's of interest, whether people are interested in stuff on a statewide level or particular neighborhoods.
What analytics tools do you use for that, Twitter?
Specifically, I use one called Hootsuite. HOOTSUITE. You can run multiple different accounts on there, which is nice. And it'll show you how many people click through to each of your links. It's a URL shortener as well. So you can just put in your URL there. And they have a browser bookmark, so it's super easy to tweet pages that you're on, and it'll track how many people click on it per day over as long as pretty much people are clicking on it. So you can go back and see relevancy. You can say, for example, around John Henderson, we had tons of people on the east side of town being super active. But, for example, our next rally that we're having is over on the west side of town near the West End, which is stereotypically a very violent area in Atlanta. So
you can have a Twitter page link to this, because my tool doesn't have this Twitter page that I cannot do. I can do a website, but I can't do a page.
You
want? So you're talking about a Twitter page, right? Your mm-hmm. Twitter, but I in my tool, so this, you can do a Twitter page, like your own Twitter link you can analyze with this, right? With Hootsuite.
It's not your web page. It's not your Twitter profile that you're analyzing.
Yeah. Like, but for the link that you're sending.
The link that you're sending, yeah. Absolutely. No matter who owns it at all.
It seems to me that what you're saying is not so much concerned with the content, but the format dictates kind of what you say. You're not changing your messages. I mean, you wouldn't be saying one thing on Twitter and something entirely opposite.
Not on the same subject.
No. You have your messages stay the same, but they're packaged differently.
Yeah, they're packaged differently, and sometimes we will blog about stuff that we will never put on Twitter.
Right.
And a lot of it is just based off of what people who... We have different audiences in a lot of these different formats, which is part of the reason that we're on multiple formats, so that we're in a space in which people already are getting information. So we're not intrusively... making them have to go to a separate destination per se. They can integrate it into how they're already receiving their information, whether it's an RSS feed or their Twitter or their Facebook or whatever is easiest for them. is what we're trying to do. And due to the fact that we are pretty much targeting every single person who lives in the city of Atlanta, it's been spanning a lot. And one of the biggest projects I've had is trying to figure out what sort of sweet spot of different communication methods can I use in order to get some of the more important messaging out to literally everybody despite technology differences, mm-hmm. whether it's people in Atlanta who only have like prepaid cell phones, you know, can they report crimes via SMS? Would that be, because a lot of people, for example, don't report every crime in Atlanta to the cops. Is direct mail a viable option? What type of involvement can we get from that? Is it more of the new media sort of stuff? So it's definitely been interesting. And then, I mean, I really got a lot more thinking about that when I did the ATL gas hashtag, when that started to blow up, especially once the AJC started to support it. I saw a lot of people who had never been on Twitter before joining, have no idea what they're really doing, but they were able to still use it for the service of figuring out where they could find gas. And there are literally hundreds of people in Atlanta with defunct Twitter profiles who have nothing except for trying to figure out where to get gas. And I mean, it's a perfect example of somebody who might be willing to move into a space mm-hmm. in order to reach that certain information that they're looking for, but that doesn't mean they know how to use it. I mean, I had plenty of people who were sending me messages that literally had nothing in it, and or they would just put ATL gas and assume they were getting information back, and a lot of it then goes off of education. Like, for example, AJC linked to it, but there was no explanation behind it, so people didn't necessarily know what they were getting or how to be involved and participate in it. That's another consideration. I mean, who will your users be? Who is your audience? How will they interact with stuff? How do they want to interact with stuff?
Come back to your stuff. So you find out, sorry about that, you want to know. So you find out your users, or rather, so your target, whoever it is, okay? In Twitter, I mean, I know I'm using Twitter very limited. Like, I just say what I'm doing, and there's some followers, maybe 5 or 10 of them who just say follower. But I've never used anything else apart from the name, so just because for this, for my ignorance. But how is you can do it so that we, suppose, we are finding the people who have passion or something that you were talking about initially, mm-hmm. and then how do you do that? And then, once you found them, then how do you market to them that they follow you or some kind of communication that happens with them and your
You can't ask somebody to follow you. You can, but you can't expect.
But then you can actually.
You have to give them a reason to want to. For example, we hope to drive traffic to our site by providing information that they can't find anywhere else, or that it's just more work for them to find anywhere else.
Sure. So then how do they find that this information exists in your site? That's what I'm trying to say.
How did they do what?
That you are working on this particular idea or this particular mission or this particular cause. Mm-hmm. How do they find you that you are working on this?
That's what I was just talking to. We're trying to find where these people already are and basically put ourselves in front of them. I mean, it's been everything through press releases, through rallies, through our online efforts, through all sorts of stuff. We have petitions all around town right now, which help draw traffic towards the information site, but we're also working on doing a lot of offline stuff that complements the online stuff in order to drive online traffic in addition to being able to reach the people who don't necessarily own a home computer. So ultimately, you have to build the resource. You have to give them a reason in order to participate, whether it's signing up for something, donating a dollar, whatever your goal is. You have to give them a reason and an incentive in order to be able to participate.
The question I like to start with, I do a lot of work where we have a defined community and we need to get people to work together, or there's desire, and so it's not like everybody in Atlanta, it's actually, you know, there's, you know, 1,000 people that have names, but I like to start with the question of what do people need, rather than what can we get people to contribute or what would get them interested in coming, like starting with the question of what do people need to do their jobs or to do whatever it is, and then also asking what is the surplus energy that's being created in the community when we do things or when they have events, what's the surplus that's being created? Is it, you know, a list of contacts? Is it that they've created resources? Is it just having the community be able to see itself and know that people aren't alone so that we have photos? And so thinking about where you have energy needs and where you have energy surplus.
Absolutely.
And that's more, I mean, my works have been a bit different. Phenomenal about the broadcast, but it might apply in those situations too.
Yeah. So how do you do that? How do you need versus surplus and stuff?
I ask individual people, what do you need to do your job? What are you lacking? What would make your life better? What could your peers be providing you with that would make
you
better?
So how many times per hour, per day, or per week you spend on that?
I mean, for an average client, like, I'll spend 20 hours asking people and 20 hours doing 20-minute interviews, so it can be a lot of asking different people what they need and what they could be providing. Because, like the brand Atlanta people found, you can't just build a site and expect people to show up. Like, it doesn't work. like that was so predictable.
Yeah.
Oh, you built a social network, you said nobody came. Why didn't you pay me $50,000 and save yourself $50,000?
Yeah.
But seriously, you have to ask your people, and if you're trying to reach a ton of people, you have a different experience than if you're trying to reach a more narrow, like you're trying to reach 1,000 individuals, or you know, you're trying to reach, you know, 4 million people in Atlanta. These are different.
But then, you know, do what you do at a job and stuff like that. That's what I'm saying. I want to do that as well, but I only have, say, 1 or 2 hours a week, and it doesn't go anywhere.
Well, then you need to get pretty efficient about how you're asking people. And you need to find other people who are interested in what you're doing. I mean, people come, but that's part of what I do, is ask people. Trying to find out what all the people who you might be trying to reach share in common. What is the common goal? You've got people coming across, your message is very broad.
You know,
but what are they all, there's probably something that they are all seeking. And if you can find that, like, higher piece, then you might have something.
Sure, I have some. Anyway, I'll talk to you offline.
Okay. Steven.
Thanks. Whatever you do, don't just have a million followers and start selling service, because we'll see you 100 miles away. I just had a question about the Hootsuite. Is that on top of the interface of Twitter, or is that separate? Sort of
about the what?
Hootsuite.
The way that you can either go to the site and do it through that, or they have an option. I have just a browser bookmark, so it comes up as a pop-up page, and it doesn't interrupt what you're doing in the background.
So is it automatic when you're doing your tweets from
I'm doing it from the pop-up window that shows up. Like, if I'm on a page, for example, like if AAC just posted something that I'm interested in Twittering about, then I can just open up the AAC screen, or I can copy the URL. I press my little browser button, and then it gives me an option to put in a URL and shorten it. I can actually, you can schedule tweets through it as well. So if you want to tweet in the future, you can tell them exactly date and time of when you want it to go out, and it will do that as well.
That perfect segue to my follow-up question, which is, when you release something, are you making efforts to be cognizant of volume of activity on Twitter? Like, I know that there's people who do, so you're thinking about...
I Twitter more during the work week. I Twitter more around lunch hour. I mean, just generally based off of my experience in that space, but Twitter specifically, those tend to be in more traffic periods. And I can see, again, through my analytics that I've done, that I get more click-through. And obviously, if you're producing any type of content, you want people to see it. And you do have a lot of stuff, especially with, like, a blog. People are going to hit a lot of the older entries later on, for example. And some of it's time relevant, some of it isn't. It depends on what you're working on. But I definitely try to do it during more high-frequency times, unless it's something that's completely time relevant that it needs to go out at that moment.
And if you're linking to other people's content, not your own, do you think, is there a way that you're looking at that you can monetize that? And if you're getting a lot of click-throughs that you can prove to AJC or something, mm-hmm. that's got to be worth something to somebody.
I mean, from ATAC's perspective solely, we're not looking to monetize it because we're not really looking to make money. We're looking to leverage our relationship, for example, with AJC when we link to their content. And hopefully we use that as an opportunity to get more coverage about the things that we're doing, the information that we publish, whatever it happens to be. We use it as a relationship builder more than a way of monetizing it. Eventually, once we do get our nonprofit status, we'll look towards stuff like grants. And I'm really trying to also leverage a lot of more geo-specific technologies so that we can feed a lot of the information on the site based around different areas of town. As well, which goes into a whole other story, but again, grant related, which is more the type of monetization that I'm interested in.
We're really just looking in order to get reputation, publicity, and adoption of what we use as we build it out, as it's appropriate. We're not necessarily looking for site traffic right now because there isn't much there right now. When we have something announced or something like that, we look for visibility of it, but we do it through a lot of different ways. And a website right now and all of our existing social media efforts are a way of corralling people together so that later on when we are ready for a full launch of the resource that we are in the middle of developing, we'll already know who to target. We'll already know the people who are interested in it because they told us that they're interested.
Okay, just coming to your question and what you point out here. I have this question I've asked the audience as well as all of your comments. Why do you think that a cause could not be associated with making money or making selling something? For give me some just an example just to associate with it. I'm actually having a website in which I'm trying to create custom logo, custom messaging, and custom things I'm creating in the downtown or some neighborhood parts whatever are struggling, and there's a lot of other ideas of that. And this website that people buy, actually they can actually send a donation to an affiliate group, a nonprofit that they're associated with. So for the church group or your Atlanta Society for Nonprofit for our police foundation. Whatever it is, So so for example, a Nike or maybe Polo, whatever shirt. And then we would have custom messaging or custom logo that they can choose or what they can say if they want to. And then we will sell that, and then your nonprofit makes money. Then the drop ships, and then the jobs are created, and we are also making money. So why not we think that out of the box and say, okay, you have a cause, but the cause should not be totally relied on donors, but you should be able to self-generate revenues.
That just has to do with how your business is set up. A lot of nonprofits have specific rules as far as how you can make money and where it's put towards. And how you spend it, which is part of the reason we're not a nonprofit yet, because we've been really trying to figure out, for example, if somebody decides to, it's an election year in Atlanta this year, and if somebody chooses to run for mayor and has some really fantastic idea of how to solve all the city's crime, will it affect our ability to become like a 501c nonprofit if we sit there and advertise, for example, this particular candidate that we believe has a very reliable plan. I mean, and even as far as making money, it depends on what your cause is. Like, for example, if we sat there and tried to sell brass knuckles, it would kind of work against the concept of what we're trying to do. You know, and, I mean, you can even say, like, we could offer a discount with local places who are offering, like, home security, and exchange for that, they give us some type of cut of whatever they make. That's fine, but it depends on if it's allowing you to become biased towards the message you're putting out. Mm-hmm. Like, for example, from where we are, we can't really state much bias towards we think this is the right answer, this is a wrong way to go about it, beyond general ethics, because it affects our credibility and what we're trying to do.
Mm-hmm. I think there is a way to do that. I mean, that's why, one of the reasons why we kind of created a page. Right now, we're not really focused on raising money from that, but we're hoping that by getting out there, by building all those people to come to the Police Foundation's page, come to our Facebook, find out all of the things that we can do, that one day that will translate into donors, and that they will see our mission is something that's worthwhile, and they say, hey, this is how I can affect crime in Atlanta, and one of the things that I can do is donate X amount of dollars. And so by doing that, you can translate that into money and into donors.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of any type of viral marketing, period, especially with social media, is it is totally more of a long-tail response that you're getting. And the good thing about social media, too, is that you can really build it from the ground up, where you're building that level of support. And a lot of times, those customers or those advocates that you earn for your brand or your company end up sticking around with you a lot longer, even if it's just through general awareness to begin with. Zero action, zero any type of money involvement whatsoever. Later on, you can often convert that to potentially donations or sale of a particular product or whatever it is that you might be trying to do based off of that relationship that you've already formed.
Yeah. How do you deal with, and this might, I don't know, maybe ATAC would be an example, but say when you first start something, you might have time to kind of personally respond to each Facebook message that you receive. things of that nature. And then as things kind of get crazy, get larger, and if you're trying to respond to messages maybe on your website and comments on your blog and then on your Facebook and then on your Twitter and just like, and then also do your job, and then, and you're only one person. So, so do you have advice about what maybe you did with that, and maybe things changed you to make along the way from when it was small to when it got so much coverage?
Yeah, I mean, like, for example, not social change related, but as far as scalability, for example, Comcast has a Twitter account in which they do customer service through, and they initially just had one guy who was in charge of doing all of it, and he would personally respond to people. And as it became more and more known, they ended up having to hire on additional people who would do it. That basically, only take on what you can handle yourself right now. You're one person, you know what type of time and energy you have to dedicate towards whatever initiative you're trying to do. And all you can do is work within your means. Otherwise, you'll be completely overwhelmed and it can backfire against you.
Do you think that affects, though, like, for example, my job, part of the thing is to educate people what CARE is doing, but also is to potentially bring on new donors. So cultivation, often if you can do it one-on-one, is a lot better. Mm-hmm. But then if I'm one person running all this stuff at the same time, I don't really have that much time to
go and do the
to do a lot of personal follow-up.
I mean, so, like, for example, you might, again, not really related, but a way in which you can be very involved with less work. There are tools, for example, that you can use. Like, for example, there's a tool you can use where when you update your Twitter, it also updates your Facebook status. And there's other sorts of stuff like that in which you can streamline a lot of your work that you're trying to do. And then it's just an issue of you're not going in there twice. You're not trying to put out the information and then go follow up on it. You put the message out there once, and then you can go back and individually follow up on that sort of stuff. And basically being able to allocate, the more you do something like that, you'll know, oh, well, we get more responses on Facebook, for example, than we do on this other network, so I'm going to have to spend or check this more frequently. Or if it's an issue of you're getting a lot of questions about a particular topic, maybe instead of going back and reaching to those individual people, you can answer the question to where it hit, to where it's visible to all those people who are asking the question, even if it's syndicating the same information over multiple different networks, in order to kind of respond to their need without necessarily having to do it one-on-one, though one-on-one will end up being less valuable.
Do you guys spend a lot of time doing one-on-one responding? Or?
I do the best that I can. I, unfortunately, am at the task of doing all of our communications and our entire website. And it, especially in the beginning, and it, I'm definitely behind on it, but it's I keep track of it regardless, so that when I do have time, I can get back and do it. But initially, we had accusations of what are our intentions, who are we focusing, do we have certain biases or whatever. And like, for example, we would have Twitter people talking about it on Twitter, we would have people blogging about it, and a lot of times it's people who, and just based off of citizen journalism and social media and how it works, is people will make opinions and they'll talk about it no matter what information they've seen or not seen, and all they can do is make an opinion based off of what they've seen or not seen. So it's not necessarily a right or a wrong opinion, it's a not fully informed opinion sometimes.
Did you go back and inform them, or did you kind of let it be like, well, the truth will eventually come out in the wash with everyone?
I mean, I definitely tried to reach out and was sort of like, hey, you know, thank you for even acknowledging of what we're doing, and really make sure they know that I didn't just see that you were completely going off on something that we did. I was trying to understand your perspective, and I read it, and I thought about it, and I'm responding to you with how I feel about it. And it is on behalf of the organization, but it's also definitely from a personal level as well. And I think that especially when you're a small organization, that's really important. And then again, you know, you have to pick your battles. For example, if you are working on behalf of a bigger organization and don't have a lot of resources, maybe you target the people who are the loudest, who have the most traffic, who are most influential in their particular networks that are closely aligned with what you're trying to do. I mean, it really varies.
Did you do those responses publicly or directly?
Publicly.
Okay.
And a lot of times, for example, on a blog post, I can respond to something, and if other people have already responded to the initial blog post, then by me responding publicly, sometimes, depending on what type of tracking the blog has, whether it notifies you of follow-up comments or anything like that, they can go back and see, like, hey, this person reached out, you know, and responded to them about that. That's kind of cool. Or maybe nobody will ever see it again, or somebody 3 months later down the road will see the blog post, and then they might scroll through the comments and see that there was an official response.
So you go and respond on their blogs?
I respond publicly, yeah.
And
I
mean, do you respond on your own also?
On our own blog?
Yeah.
No, but personally, with ATAC, it's because we're trying to remain positive. We're not necessarily, right. We can argue up and down what we think is going wrong, but that doesn't really help anything. What we can do is offer suggestions on what can be better or how people can help out. So we definitely always try to take the proactive, positive approach in everything we do, especially because it's crime. We haven't publicly addressed anything on our site.
I have a question. Initially, when you started it, and of course, the initial messaging is more important than the information. It's a little more important because that depends on the team that follows you, the core team. How do you go about the initial form of the team that follows on that? And is it like a person that you know or that you like or that knew before? Or it's like, how do you go about recruiting this initial group of followers?
It depends on what it is. I mean, when I was working with these people to start a bike organization, I was finding people in Atlanta who had bikes. You know, you find people who are looking for what you're trying to promote, sell, work with, whatever. And if it's somebody who already has an interest in it, then it very feasibly would be of interest to them. If you're trying to, I don't know, if you're looking to find a place to go buy a Coca-Cola and somebody sells Coca-Cola and just happens to be two blocks from you, then it's totally in line to say, like, hey, by the way, we're right around, I saw you're looking for Coke, and right around the corner.
I have some solutions to some of the problems about the economy and all. But I know that if I am trying to work on it on my own individual level, of course, I will just add to my more work that is not finished, right? So if this is like a thing that we are all facing in America and the world, but then there's a lot of everybody's interest. But now the question is how I can put a team that is required and go out and I talk about what we could do and all that. And that's actually just asking me example for the discussion level so that for this, you know, and what I find is that what the people I'm trying to associate with, they have a little more vested interest, and they have a little more self-centered than I am typically. So what I should do and what I should not do to include these people?
Include the people your messaging or in who is reading your messaging?
Again, reading, of course, include the people who are willing to be a part of it, but they have a very specific interest. Because I'll give you an example. Like, for instance, there's a company in who wants me to outsource my projects to them, you know? So now they want to come up with helping the community, you know? So those kind of things you very do. People have a more vested interest, which, again, everybody should have that. But, again, then how I should be able to, I mean, I'm just giving an example for discussion here. Then what I need to do, like, if I'm having these people as my followers because they have very vested interest, they're a little more willing to follow than somebody just selfless, you know. And if somebody's selfless, how I should find them? That's another question.
You can't force people to follow you.
Yeah, sure, I know.
Yeah.
But I'm not asking forcing people to follow them.
Yeah.
But again, the people who have the most potential or most likely to follow me or whatever. So I need to reach out to them and give the message to them. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, I mean, you can reach out to them, but at the end of the day, you have to be able to give them an incentive for wanting to participate.
Sure. Sure.
And if you don't have that, then they don't have to. Social media is completely voluntary. It is selective. It's,
sure.
It's very personal, but it's completely impersonal at the same time.
Ask them to invite their friends.
Yeah, I mean, sometimes, you know, maybe get some friends who are involved. So it looks like there's a group. And, for example, people are always willing to join a group more than stand by themselves, 10 times to none. And maybe you want to target people in Birmingham, Alabama. Then you find 3 people in Birmingham, Alabama, or something like that, who can each perhaps talk to somebody one-on-one and work from there.
Why don't you look and see who's talking about the same things you're interested in? And then converse with those people, and then you all collaborate on expanding.
Yeah, I'm already doing that, but then the people that I found talking about it, they are doing it at a different level. They're doing it at an intellectual level. I find more on that, but they are not really...
Well, then maybe you're looking in the wrong places. Maybe the medium in which you're looking for people who are talking about what you're talking about are obviously talking about something different. It's similar in topic, but it's not necessarily the level you're talking
about.
What
I find is people are in Harvard or whatever, publishing in WSJ or some big school that they're intellectual, but they have these ideas, but they don't have the initiative or the commitment to implement. You know, that's what I'm lacking.
Can I just have a question for all of you? Does anybody here participate in like offline networking around like technology for nonprofits or social media for nonprofits or open source technology here locally in Atlanta that has groups that maybe you want to take a moment to promote? Or is my experience that I have?
I don't, but I know of one, and I can't remember the name of it right now. They meet at the American Cancer Society in 10 months. What's that group called? Do you remember the name?
There is an organization that's based out of Boston right now, which I've actually been talking with the organizer about opening up kind of like an Atlanta chapter that's called Social Media for Social Change.
Right.
And it's based out of Boston. They've done some events in New York. It's very much a baby organization, but they picked nonprofits, causes, whatever, and really try to help them with more of the social media stuff, whether it's a particular fundraising event or whether it's helping leverage social media within these organizations.
Right.
And a lot of it's just information distribution and helping out nonprofits.
It's called NetSquare.
NetSquare.
You should look into that.
Yeah, I'm familiar with them.
NETSQARE?
I mean, there's bloggers groups. There's a WordPress.
Yeah, I mean, there's tons of groups up there. I mean, I haven't seen any with many of the bigger nonprofits in Atlanta specifically, besides NetSquare.
But tech region, there could be
some nonprofits.
Nonprofit, they're making, of course.
20 years.
I have a question. It kind of goes back to, you know, soliciting donations, and that is this question about MySpace versus Facebook versus. Mm-hmm. And I think the next one is LinkedIn, maybe with Plaxo in there someplace. And for example, if I were going after donations about, you know, from old white guys, right? Anybody over 30, you know, is on LinkedIn. So that's where I would go. Mm-hmm. You know, you were talking about MySpace and the bands, but then after that, you were talking almost only about Facebook, which I think is kind of, I think it works really well. Mm-hmm. That's the thing that I love about Facebook, because it seems to work really well and kind of on the leading edge of what's available application-wise or functionality-wise.
I mean, it definitely...
Do you have an opinion there?
It definitely varies. I mean, like, for example, I would personally never try to get any type of donation through LinkedIn, but that's because it's not like, would you go to a job interview and ask for a donation?
I'm not saying...
No, I understand. You were talking about it from, like, an audience perspective.
Through LinkedIn, and the way they do it is they connect first from you to your donors, and then donors to their friends, mm-hmm. and then you get, I don't know, I mean, I think LinkedIn now lets you have a page. I don't know if a nonprofit can have a page as an entity.
But for example...
Could you have supporters connect there the way that you would with your Facebook page?
You could, for example, but just in the general structure of LinkedIn, it's a lot more of a passive community versus something like Facebook, which is a lot more active. It definitely encourages a lot more communication because they enable it through having chats and wall posts and your bulletins and all the external applications that they have built into the system. It encourages a more active relationship. So you're a lot more likely, I believe, due to that fact, they're already used to that type of behavior in that environment, so they're a lot more likely to take an action in that environment than they are in a more passive community in which most people on Facebook, they go and they add people. Occasionally they go back and check. They'll check messages as they come, but it's not necessarily the type of community in which you log into and participate in it.
Then the LinkedIn.
I mean,
but LinkedIn is a lot more mature, a lot more executives, or a lot more professional. You find LinkedIn who are using it. But Facebook, I find the same people on Facebook, not everybody, but actually a large percent, who use it for social reasons.
Mm-hmm.
Who are you using it for?
Okay.
I feel like it's changing, though, also. The demographics of Facebook.
Oh,
I mean, just in the last six months.
Apparently, women over 40 are like the highest growing group on Facebook right now.
But people still often want to keep their social and their professional, lives separate using LinkedIn and Facebook.
I mean, just period. If you are any type of organization and looking to get into social media, an easy way to figure out maybe what you're trying to do is look for companies that are like you, people who have similar products, who are trying to reach similar demographics, and see what they're doing online. And again, listen before you engage, and you'll feel more comfortable. People working with you will feel more comfortable. Conversing with you will feel more comfortable. And definitely, like, you might not necessarily need to live in a social network. I mean, especially with nonprofits, there's stuff like Idea Blob, which helps a lot of nonprofits and causes do a lot of fundraising and grants and stuff like that. And there's lots of different options.
Idea Blob?
Blob, B-L-O-B, which is sponsored by some corporate company. I can't even think of who right now.
Juniper. It's a credit card company.
Is it Juniper?
How do 100 networks? Out of the 100 networks that you belong to, are there any little gems out there that you've seen?
And, I use them all for different reasons. I really do.
And what do you think of friend feed? Does friend feed matter?
Friend feed for me personally is overwhelming. It's more information than I could possibly want in one sitting. I personally am a fan. I like the idea of syndicating all that information into one source and being able to get that right away if I need it, but it's not something I use habitually. If I'm looking for information on something in particular, or if I'm looking to catch up with a friend in particular, I enjoy being able to go and get that all in one place. But I like to selectively opt out of stuff, which you have those settings on friend feed. But for me, it's just the signal to noise ratio can be overwhelming, especially, I think, once it attempts to hit some type of mainstream adoption, I don't think most people would be able to handle it.
How about event promotion? I'm sorry. Like Eventful and Upcoming and things like that?
I use Upcoming to death. Again, it depends on the type of events. Upcoming I use the most. Facebook I use for events often. If it's something more socially based, like music or a party, I use Going a lot, which is awesome. But, for example, it's much bigger in markets like New York and San Francisco than it is in Atlanta. But a lot of that is adoption level.
How about Evite?
Evite is kind of dying.
Really?
Yeah. I mean, it definitely has its benefits, and it's definitely easy because a lot of people are very familiar with it, so it has that option. But it's, again, if you can, the great thing about Upcoming and Going and a lot of these other event services is that you can see lots of other related events. There's already a community there. There's already information that's there versus with Evite, you have a particular page that you're going to, and that's pretty much where it ends.
I just wish someone would kill Evite already. it's kind of a long-running joke that everybody keeps trying to build a company to plant Evite.
They've recently integrated some SMS support as well, so they're definitely fighting for their life. I don't see it working well. And the great thing about a lot of these
going are the
first one, Upcoming.
The Upcoming, Going, and
And Facebook. The three of those are the ones I use the most frequently, and it's just because that's where the audience that I personally try to hit with the events. But a lot of it also is, for example, Upcoming is a fantastic widget that you can integrate into sites very easily. Other people can click on the events and say whether they're interested, add comments to it, buy tickets through it. You can add images to it. It really streamlines well with the information that might be related around a particular event. While with Evite, if you have press coverage, for example, of an event that you're throwing, you don't really have a way to integrate that in unless you sit there and jam it full of links, which most people won't even look at.
I was also going to say that there's a channel called Do Good Together. I don't know if you're familiar with that. Some of you all may be. But it's where you can go, and it's for nonprofits specifically, and you can build a page. You can talk about your programs, your events, all of your information. And right now it's linked through AJC. And so if you go to AJC online, there's usually some ad that says Do Good Together. The person can click there, and they can find information about your nonprofit. And then also GuideStar, if you're a nonprofit and you have a GuideStar profile. They've recently relaunched the way that GuideStar looks so that it's more active, so you can add pictures and different information. And GuideStar is great because it's where people go to find out, you know, if your nonprofit is legitimate or, you know, your fundraising ratio. But now they've made it so that it's not just information. You can put pictures, events, and all that. And so both of those are really good specifically for the nonprofit sector.
Yeah, I hope you guys had fun. Thanks for coming.
Thank you.
The song you heard in this podcast was Garden by Cargo Cult, available only on magnatune.com. Thanks for listening to Unconcast on the Georgia Podcast Network. If you have recorded or are planning to record a discussion that you think would make a good episode of Unconcast, email us at info@gapodcastnetwork.com to learn how you can submit it.